morning. This is the, afternoon. That's how the day's been going, too. This is the Senate Environment Natural Resources Committee. This afternoon we have the Hunting and Fishing License Fee Committee bill, which is an omnibus bill. Senator Ingebretson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. This is, in fact, a committee bill. A little different than what we normally see here, but nevertheless, it is the bill that has been talked about and discussed in the legislature for some years now. I've been around for 6 years and been on this committee the whole time, and there's been talk about, we're going to have to do this pretty soon, folks. We're going to have to do this pretty soon, folks. And in order to keep up with times, we looked at it last year. We didn't think last year, with the budget considerations that we had to make here, the tough considerations both parties and the governor had to make at the legislature, and it just wasn't in the makings last year. And however, now we're getting down to what's referred to commonly as crunch time. It's to the point now where if we don't look at raising our hunting and fishing and trapping fees in the state of Minnesota, the DNR's function in that particular area of the DNR is going to be jeopardized within less than a year's time. So I, for one, and I don't think it's any secret, said that I would be carrying this bill. I would bring it forth after discussions with all the hunting groups and all the folks at the DNR last year, and I said this year that I would do that. I'm true to my word. I'm bringing it forward, and today it's the, as far as I know, I don't think the House has brought it forward yet, but this is the first hearing that's going to be touching at. So, members, I think what we'll do is in your packets you'll see, and if I can go through them, the Minnesota Conservation Federation. You'll see letters of support here. You've got the Minnesota Deer Hunters Association, both press statements as well as, and there's other and members. There's people from each organization here. If you would want reaffirm their support for this, Sportsmen for Change, very large organization that played a very large role with all the hunting organizations in the 2008 constitutional amendment, the 0.375% sales tax increase, very active in the state of Minnesota, Minnesota Outdoor Heritage Alliance, you'll see one from them, and I'm sure if you're like me, you're reading your emails. They go back and forth depending upon what's the hot issue of the day. But I will tell you that my emails, and I think a lot of you will probably agree, have been getting them starting last year all through the year. And once this, of course, hits the table, we're going to be hearing from all of our sportsmen out there, because this is kind of unique in that the sportsmen are bringing this to us. They're actually the ones that this affects. The hunting men and women and the kids and the youth in our communities are saying we need to, and we're very serious about these fees, and we need to keep on top of this. We need to keep these areas funded in the state of Minnesota because they are very important, not only to them, but to the economic situation here in Minnesota. I don't think too many people are going to disagree with that. You're going to have some folks that are going to say that for whatever reason, they're going to come up the atmosphere now is not the atmosphere to be raising taxes. Folks, this is not a tax, not to be confused with a tax at all. If I fish, I pay. If I don't want to fish and if I don't want to hunt, my taxes do not go up. I don't have to pay for this fee. I don't have to do that. We have to be very clear with that with the public, it seems to me, because there sometimes gets to be a confusion. And I don't care about the politicians years ago that ran that tax versus fee situation up the pole. That was years ago. This is now, and we have to move on. So I have quite a lineup, as you can see here. I'm going to call on, first of all, I'm going to call on Gary Leaf, the executive director for Sportsmen for Change, and then we're going to have a pretty exciting guest here by the name of Bud Grant, who everybody certainly can remember as an avid outdoorsman, sportsman, former Hall of Fame NFL coach. and who brings a lot of hunting experience and a lot of good information, I think, and give you an idea when somebody like this comes forward who does a lot of traveling and a lot of hunting throughout not only the United States but other countries, and will tell you just what a jewel we have here in Minnesota. So with that, we'll start out with Mr. Leaf, the Executive Director of Sportsmen for Change.
Welcome, Mr. Leaf.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, my name is Gary Leaf. I'm the Executive Director of Sportsmen for Change, and we do hunting and grassroots advocacy. Sportsmen have had a long tradition of self-imposing costs on themselves, going back to the 1930s with Pittman, Robertson, and so on, to help pay for a whole range of conservation programs that stick with us today. And we do view this as part of participating in the tremendous outdoors that we have, depending on what type of hunting people are interested in, depending on what type of angling that they're interested in. All of those require that you have a license, and that's a voluntary choice and a small part of the overall cost that sportsmen, depending on what they're hunting or what they're fishing for, incur to participate in that sport. We're here in support of a hunting and fishing price increase, I call it. It's just just part of what you have to do to participate in the outdoors. If you take a look at gas prices, the last time that the hunting and fishing license fee increase were raised was somewhere around $1.60, $1.70 a gallon. We see that they're $3.50 and $3.50 and north of that. The other factor is that I don't know if a lot of people realize how big hunting and angling is in Minnesota, that it generates about $415 million of state revenue, Minnesota state taxes and local taxes. It is about $9.5 million per day of economic activity. It finances a whole range of different retailers. I think there's there's north of about 1,200 retailers in the state that sell hunting and fishing licenses. So it's a significant economic factor. The other thing I mentioned that in doing the analysis that's been done on the hunting and fishing license increase is Southwick and Associates, which is probably the leading national resource economic firm in the United States. They do studies going all the way back to the economic costs of the Exxon Valdez. They work with every state on a whole range of hunting, fishing, and trapping issues. They make sense out of the inventory. We think that the outreach that we've done over the last year and a half at a whole range of events, whether they be at retailers or various sportsmen shows, that there's been very little concern about an increased cost or increase in the fishing and angling licenses in Minnesota. I think that it will be well received to maintain the level of programs we have here in Minnesota. So with that, thank you.
Thank you. Mr. Senator Ingebretson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members, and thank you for those opening remarks. If I could, I also have a letter that's being copied from the Fee Oversight Committee members. That's a committee that's put together some years ago by the administration as well as the DNR. And what that particular committee does is on a yearly basis they meet and they go over the revenues and the expenditures with regards to just what we're talking about today. It's fees and expenditures, and you'll see. In fact, I think I might have even handed this out to the committee earlier. There was a fairly large packet of their recommendations, and their recommendation, of course, stands strong as well. That these fees need to be increased. So you'll be receiving that as well. And I just wanted to mention that. If I could move into the other presenter, next presenter, Bud Grant, who'd come forward, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Mr. Senator Ingebretson. Mr. Grant, welcome to the committee.
Mr. Chair, I did have a short conversation with Mr. Grant on the way down the hall, and he assured me that he was going to stay focused on hunting and fishing and not wander off, and well, I guess maybe he might wander off onto the Minnesota Vikings like to do that. So, but members, I really appreciate him coming to the committee. And again, he's going to bring I think a real tremendous statement as to what you folks would really like to hear here today. So thank you.
Well, welcome again, Mr. Grant.
Thank you.
Identify yourself and continue with your testimony, please.
My name is Mr. Grant.
Yeah.
And I'm here, and I'm Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. What am I doing here? Well, I'm not here to promote the stadium. I'm here to promote something more important than the stadium, and that's a tax increase for a hunting and fishing heritage. I'm 85 years old. I've been doing outdoor activities for my entire life. And I'll start by saying that we're very privileged in this state to live here, which I consider the crown jewel of the United States. Minnesota has more opportunities for hunting and fishing than any other state in the Union. They maybe have better elk hunting in Montana, but or other parts of the world, maybe quail hunting in the South. But Minnesota provides more opportunities for fishing and hunting in the varying degrees, species, or whatever you want to do, than any other state in the Union, in my estimate, in my opinion. Now, as referred to here, that I've hunted and fished. I've been retired for over 25 years, and so if you think that's easy, it's hard work having fun. Let me tell you that. When you retire, you really stay busy. So I've had the opportunity to visit and hunt and fish in many places. Minnesota, of course, that's where I live. I got 6 children, 19 grandchildren, 6 great-grandchildren. They all live within 30 minutes of my house. Why? Well, mostly because of my wife, who passed away recently, but probably here because they enjoy living in this great state of ours. The topic today is the increase of the fishing and hunting license. This is the greatest bargain that the state offers its citizens, to buy a fishing and hunting license for only fishing lights for $17. Am I correct on that? And we want to raise that 24. Is that correct? I want to be right on my figures here. And that is a small price to pay. I refer you to Gary Leaf's paper here, look at that very carefully. Look at the numbers that are involved in there. I mean, we're talking about millions of dollars. Now, our state is in a state of maintenance. We can't exist at this level. Now, I'm old enough to have remembered when all we had to do was sell fishing license, sell hunting license, pay for the game wardens, pay for collections of the money because the fish and the game were there. That's no longer true. We're beyond that. We're actually in a maintenance mode, but we'll never achieve the amount of game and fish we had years ago. Now, we have more turkeys. We have more geese, less ducks, fluctuation in pheasants and grouse and whatnot. Our fishing needs to be shorn up. We can't do this. We got many invasive species that we're dealing with today. Now, who takes care of that? Well, that has to come from the budget of the DNR. Primarily. Now, maybe you can get some help from the federal government. I'm not privy to all of that. But I know that in order for us to maintain our position as the greatest state to live in, it's got to be addressed, and it's got to be addressed monetarily. You're all dealing in this building with money. And Gary, again, referred to what it costs. It's minuscule to what you pay to go fishing. And it's a one-time, I don't know if it's a fee, it's certainly not a tax. Once a year, you buy a fishing license or a hunting license, small game license, and then you get the opportunity to fish in all of our public waters, all of our state forests, all of our federal lands, all of our county lands, all of the property that timber companies own that allow us to hunt and fish on. We've got more opportunities in this state than any other state in the Union. If you go to Texas and try to go deer hunting or try to go duck hunting or anything, you got to have a lease. The license doesn't get you anything. Here you can buy a license and walk down the street and fish out of the river down here. We've got the three greatest river systems in the country, in the St. Croix, the Mississippi, the Minnesota River. We've got more opportunities to do that, and all we're charging is minuscule to what the benefits of the environment, I mean, the benefits to your family and your recreation. It's the cheapest. I look at the paper and all these sales I got. We should advertise that we got the greatest sale in the world. We got a fishing license that only costs $17. That's not 2 gallons of gas next week to get where you want to go. I mean, that's terrible. If it was up to me, I'd have it $28, $20, $30, and I don't think anybody would object to that, because the benefits to us as a citizen of this state is unbelievable compared to other states. And I'm not talking out of school. If you've been to these other places, this is the greatest place in the world. And we've got to maintain it. Now, I'm beyond maintaining. The other things, the pollution is coming into it, the invasive species come in, the milfoil, I can go, all the invasive plants and animals and fish that have been brought into our environment have to be taken care of. Who's going to take care of them? Environment and Natural Resources Committee and our DNR. They've got to do it, but they've got to have the funds to do it. And the price of everything has gone up. You know that. I don't have to tell you that. So we need all of our biologists. We've got a great DNR. They're just great. But they need the funds. They need the enthusiasm. They need the capacity to do the things that have to be done to maintain this quality of life that we have. That's why I'm here today. And I hope that the committee sees fit to grant a fishing license increase, so that we can all enjoy, and I can enjoy my later years as a member of this state and my family. But you know what? I'm not talking about our grandchildren. I'm talking about tomorrow and you and I, not my kids, not my grandkids. I'm talking about today, tomorrow, and next year. That's what we're talking about in the next 3 or 4 years. The license, 2018 or 17?
Something like that, yeah.
That's what the proposal is. That's what we're talking about. We're not talking about grandkids. I'm talking about me, tomorrow, next year. That's what we want, and that's what we're looking at today, and I ask for your support in that endeavor. And thank you very much for allowing me to appear here.
Thank you, Mr. Grant. Any questions for Mr. Grant? And let's keep it to the bill. Yes.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Coach Grant,
yes.
Just wondering if you were paid by Senator Ingebretson to come here, because it's a pretty forceful testimony.
Yes, yeah, very good testimony.
Yeah, well, no, not really, no.
Thank you for coming.
Senator Ingebretson.
Mr. Chair, thank you, and I really appreciate the two guys sitting up here. And when he's talking about, it's not about the grandkids, and I need you to have a talk to my wife, actually, because where I fish and what I do in my time off, it is about the grandkids. But he's right. We need to deal with it now.
I want to do. I'm 85 years old. You can talk about your own kids. I want it today, tomorrow.
That's right. He wants it yesterday. And we know a lot of people wanted it last year. Members, if you don't have any further questions, if you notice on the Sportsman for Change letter there, the second paragraph, I didn't mention that, but and Gary may have done that, but in 2001 was the last increase. So I just wanted to make sure you knew that. And so with that, if you don't have any further questions, I'll move right down my list. And thank you very much. Mr. Grant.
Okay, thank you. Excuse me.
Yes, Senator Kelash.
Mr. Grant, I know that you do a lot of hunting out state. Can you just give us a comparison of where our hunting and fishing license are compared to where you have to get non-resident license?
Of course, if you go to another state, you're talking about a non-resident license. Now, we're not asking for a raise in the non-resident fee.
Yeah. Some we are.
But are we in the ballpark? Are we low?
No, we're low.
Really low. Okay.
We need an increase. And answer your question, compared to other states, yes. This is the biggest bargain in the country. We should advertise it in the newspaper. Come and get the bargain from the state of Minnesota. And the fishing license, as Gary referred to, is the least expense you'll pay. If you go to Grand Rapids to go fishing, and you won't get to Anoka, and you've already spent what it costs to buy a fishing license. Yeah. So it's a great bargain. Now we can't, okay. But at a bargain at the price we're advocating here, it's a big bargain.
Yeah. Okay. Thanks.
Okay, Senator Ingebretson.
We'll move on to some more testifiers here. I have Sean Dellett from Muskies Incorporated, as well as Rob Jost and Jim Bozick. They would come forward, give some short testimony.
Thank you, Senator.
Mr. Kellogg.
Mr. Chair, esteemed members of the committee, first of all, I'd like to say I'm sitting in the chair that Bud Grant was sitting in. That's awesome. This is my third year testifying for a license fee increase, and he stole all my thunder. I don't know a lot about what I'm going to say. Honest to God, this is the best place to fish in the country, and I think we were 39th on the list as far as most expensive fishing licenses here. Speaking for Muskies Incorporated, Minnesota has become the muskie destination of North America. It used to be that of Canada. As little as 10 years ago, everyone was driving through the state of Minnesota to spend all their money with resorts in Canada. Right now, the Canadian resorts are all folding that all specialize in muskies because right here is where the best muskie fishing is, bar none, and it's not even close. If we don't get this raise in the fee, the muskie program is going to suffer. Fewer people are going to be spending their dollars here. Muskie fishing in this state, by the way, has increased sevenfold in the last 12 years. So there's a lot of money being spent, especially from out-of-state licenses. And that's, let's face it, with the economy the way it is, that's what our resort owners need, is people coming in from out-of-state. I do want to say one other quick thing. My occupation, I sell fasteners and hardware to manufacturers in this state. That's my occupation. I am very tied into the outdoor recreation, fishing, fishing electronics. I have many, many customers in those areas. One of the most robust areas of growth that I am seeing right now in our local economy is in the outdoors customers. We sell to people who make bows. We sell to people who make depth finders. We sell to people who make fish houses. Across the board, they are up anywhere from 15 to 50%. So not only by giving the DNR the money and the tools to keep our resource robust, we're not only helping them, we're not only helping the sportsmen, but quite frankly, we're helping the small business owners who have put everything on the line to make products, to supply those people, and quite frankly, people such as myself who make their living supplying these manufacturers. And I believe that there's a three-tier ring when it comes to manufacturing, as far as you have jobs for the main manufacturer, you have jobs the next ring out for those who supply that manufacturer, then you have the ring out that supplies those that supply the manufacturer. So I wanted to raise that issue as well, because oftentimes that is kind of not really thought about, that it's not that easy to think about. So
good. Thank you.
That's what I have.
Kellogg.
Thanks.
Members, we're going to hold questions till we get through some of our testimony. So, Mr. Jost, if you'd identify yourself.
Good afternoon, Mr. Chair. My name's Rob Jost. I'm the president of the Minnesota Fish and Bait Farmers Association and member of the Minnesota Aquaculture Association. Both organizations are 100% in favor of license fee increases. The only concern that we would have is that the money not be spent to compete with our industry. Right now we provide about a third of all walleye fingerling stocked and about a third of all muskie fingerling stocked in the state, and we would just be concerned that some of this money may be used to more or less compete with us as far as the DNR raising additional, having the ability to raise more fingerlings and therefore not having to buy as many fingerlings from us to stock the lakes. But other than that concern, yes, the license fee increase is needed, and I'm sure it'll be well spent. And that's all I have.
Thank you, Mr. Joss. Mr. Bosek.
Thank you, guys.
And Mr. Ness, if they'd come up.
Yeah, Mr. Chair, I own Bosek Fisheries in Garfield, Minnesota, and president of Minnesota Game Fish Stocking Cooperative. And again, we're just addressing that we're in the business to raise fish, and we're doing it at a very reasonable cost and producing a better quality fish fingerling going into the state lakes for game fish sportsmen to catch at a later date. And we're 100% in favor. This is much overdue, the license fee increase. and we want to make sure it goes ahead. But, you know, we just wanted to voice our concerns today about how the money will be used.
Great. Thank you, Mr. Bosick. Mr. Ness.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, my name is Lance Ness. I'm president of the Fish and Wildlife Legislative Alliance and also president of Anglers for Habitat. We want to offer our support for a fishing and hunting license increase. As Mr. Grant said, Coach said, you know, we have one of the rare crown jewels here in all the lower 48 states. There is no other place like Minnesota, from Lake Superior in the north, the Mississippi and Minnesota rivers and St. Croix, our prairie potholes, our valuable lake region. There's literally no other place in America that is equal to our natural resources. And yet we love them to death. We use them, and they're getting worn down. And so we have to raise those fees up to keep them, Coach said, maintained up. And it's a very valuable lesson in life for us because for some of us, it's it might not be our job, but it's our passion. We can't wait to get out. Sunny days like this, I've got turkey hunting on my mind. And when one time not too long ago, we didn't have turkeys in the state. Now we have almost half the state covered in turkeys. We have the ability to have great successes in wildlife conservation, but we need the dollars to do it, and we need the staff from the DNR to do it as well. So it's a valuable natural resource that we all love and enjoy, but we need the dollars to help it go. It has not been raised since 2001. That's almost 11, 12 years. Many years in the past when I've come before this committee, I've suggested that at some point we should look at indexing, where we just raise these fees on an annual basis. It's always a difficult time for every elected official to start raising fees. But if they knew it was coming down the road, and you guys were prepared to raise those fees, you would have a much better discussion, I think, and a little easier time come election time when those fees come rolling around, because you knew you were going to do it, and they had to be done. Just tack it to the cost of living. So there's some ideas for you as you go. But again, Minnesota sportsmen love our state, and we support the license increase. Thank you.
Thank you. Mr. Botsick.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. Gary Botsick, Executive Director of Minnesota Conservation Federation. You've got in your packet a letter from us dated March 1st. I've got an updated one for the 13th if staff could pass these out. We've got over 60 different organizations that have signed on to this letter as of today. That's the difference. The letter has not changed, but the number of supporters, conservation and environmental. This is not just a hunting and fishing proposal, but this is an environmental proposal too, as you can relate to clean water, and clean water means good fishing. So the environmental community is very interested in this as well. So we wholeheartedly support what the senator is bringing forward as a committee proposal. I would raise two concerns or two questions I'd like to have the committee discuss, one of which, if you see the proposal versus the governor's proposal, we're leaving $2.9 million on the table. If we could address that down the road, because you know, I just heard the comment that we're going to get out to 2018, 2019. This is a difficult process. Most of us have worked on this for 10 years to get back to the table, and we need to know why we're not increasing some of these licenses. I understand there's some very interesting details, and we need to talk about those. And then the second thing, Mr. Chair and members of the committee, Senator chose not to put in was the boat registration surcharge, which many of us support. You pay a surcharge now on a boat registration, which is every 3 years. We'd like to see that surcharge increased. That money is, we think, needed for the aquatic invasive species management. DNR, a year ago, that's all we were talking about in this committee was aquatic invasive species. This year it was a specialty of that arena called Asian carp. And those both need to be managed by DNR more intensely and more long-term. And we still need to find a permanent or a long-term funding source for that activity in DNR fisheries. And we'd like to discuss that further, if not this year, then in the near future. I know the governor put $4 million more on the table in his supplemental budget. It's a Band-Aid. It's a big Band-Aid, but it's still a Band-Aid. So with that, Mr. Chairman, I'll stop and take any questions. We urge support for the bill.
Good. Thank you, Mr. Botsick. Mr. Peterson. Yes.
Mr. Chair, if I could.
If Mr. Peterson would go to the chair,
come
please.
Come forward. Citizens.
Patterson. Sorry. Mr. Patterson.
Mr. Chair, before Mr. Patterson testifies, I'd like to address the issue with regards to AIS fees. But he can certainly come up here. That's fine. I'll have to sign in. Yes, there was discussion about the increase in AIS funding from the boat fees as well as the out-of-state license fees. The administration did not come forward with a request this year. And I was a little indifferent in about what we should do about that, but this committee, as well as Mr. Botsick and those concerned, have got my commitment for the future that we will be looking at raising those fees. The reason why I think probably you're not seeing an increase right now is because there is an awful lot of, as he referred to, Band-Aids coming forward. We've got funding from potentially from the governor's office on some bonding issues, as well as some other bills around there to deal with, of course, the invasive flying carp that we're all seeing in the media. And we certainly know those issues are immediate. They have to be dealt with now. That's why we're, if you will, in a little bit of a scramble for one-time dollars. And so those addresses, you know, quite frankly, anything, and I can't talk for Mr. Shad. He can make some comments when he gets up here from the DNR. But quite frankly, there's enough funding right now to for the DNR to deal with these immediate issues. This committee, I guess, Mr. Botsick, you have our commitment that we will certainly look at those fees, but we just decided not to go along with them this year, but they definitely have to be increased as well. So,
thank you. Mr. Pedersen, if you would identify yourself and give your testimony.
Yes. Good afternoon, Mr. Chairman and committee members. My name is Bruce Pedersen. I'm a retired teacher from Hutchinson, Minnesota. I didn't grow up there. I grew up in Wheaton, Minnesota, southern end of the Red River Valley in Traverse County, and I want to talk to you just a little bit about the new walk-in acres program that was instituted last fall. I represent no groups of pheasant hunters or any other groups in Minnesota. I am one of the average Joe hunters out there that probably, you know, is a rank and file to the big majority of people that hunt and fish in this state. When I grew up, I was fortunate enough to have great pheasant hunting in the 50s and 60s out at Wheaton, as well as duck hunting. All that died by about 1965 due to agricultural changes and some bad winters and whatever. And I was hooked on pheasant hunting, so I started going to South Dakota. I've been to South Dakota pheasant hunting before people knew about it. And South Dakota, of course, as you know, has got probably the best pheasant hunting in the country. But the reason they do is because they got habitat, they got birds in. And if you're going to have hunting, you've also got to have access. And every time I'd come back to Minnesota, I've said this before, I always wondered why we couldn't have a walk-in program in Minnesota. South Dakota has 1.7 million acres of walk-in land in the state. Now, we're never going to be South Dakota or have that much walk-in acreage. However, that really, really expands the access that the average person can have to go out and hunt and be outdoors and use the public lands or private lands, whatever it happens to be. I spend probably as much or more time than anybody hunting pheasants in Minnesota. Probably spend more money than I should hunting pheasants in Minnesota. But I, in the fall, go out as much as I can in western, southern, southwestern Minnesota, and I know what's going on out there. The federal and state lands out there really, really get a lot of pressure. As you know, the metro area probably has a heck of a lot more hunters than a lot of other areas, although South Dakota gets a lot of out-of-state hunters. But those public areas in Minnesota really get tromped on. On a given day, I've seen probably 15, 20 people in the same area, and the quality of pheasant hunting in southwestern Minnesota is really down. The walk-in program that came about in Minnesota 2 years ago, there was a meeting down here. I came down here and was featured on a great newspaper article by Doug Smith, March 3rd, 2010, talked about the walk-in program. And lo and behold, this fall, page 42 and 43 in your handbook, the walk-in program became an actuality or eventuality in Minnesota. It happened. I understand that the funding was in place this year, and there's funding for it next year, but after that, it's up in the air. As a pheasant hunter, I've always said that I would pay whatever it takes to have a walk-in program in Minnesota to expand the amount of land that's available to hunt. I'll pay for it. Every other pheasant hunter that I know or hunter in Minnesota, I think, feels the same way that I've talked to. And I understand there's two things on the table right now, that the federal monies are expiring, so it's either going to have to be a $15 walk-in stamp all by itself, or a $5 add-on stamp to a license or the pheasant stamp in Minnesota. I personally feel that the $15 standalone stamp is not the way to go because it's just going to have to be a standalone stamp. I think it should be for the entire group of people that would buy a pheasant stamp. Last year it was 80,000 people. It averages around 100,000 people higher in a better year of pheasant hunting. But I would rather see that $5 added onto a $7.50 stamp that would bring it up to $12.50. Then everybody pays for it, and that $12.50 or that additional $5 would put out about $500,000, which would equate to about 25,000 acres of walk-in land in Minnesota. And again, that acreage is primarily in the western and southwestern part of the state. I feel it should be expanded also to include counties like Meeker, McLeod, Sibley counties, which also have a fair amount of birds and are good pheasant habitat county. But I feel that $5, like Mr. Grant before said, $5 is a gallon of gas. It's two loaves of bread. That should be added to the pheasant stamp, and then we could have a decent walk-in program. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Mr. Pedersen. Next would be the DNR, Mr. Shad.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Chair, if I could, the bill has changed significantly, and in fact, it's hot off the press. So I think what I'll do is I'll have would it be a good idea? You want to do some presentation? Okay, Mr. Chair, we'll have Mr. Knopf go through the bill after the DNR makes some comments. So we'll do that. Thank you.
Okay.
Mr. Chairman, committee members, thanks very much. Dave Shad, Deputy Commissioner, Department of Natural Resources, and I really want to thank Senator Ingebrigtsen and the committee for bringing this very difficult issue forward here. Changing and increasing hunting and fishing license fees is never easy. We understand that, and we don't bring these requests forward to the legislature very lightly. These truly are user fees, and we don't want the fees to be barriers to participation in hunting and angling. And yet we do need to provide the necessary funding support for the biologists, for the managers, for the conservation officers, for the surveys, the research, and all that goes into supporting the good hunting and fishing and trapping that we've got in this state. As Gary Leaf said, hunters and anglers have always been willing to pay their way. They've come forward voluntarily, said, impose fees on us, impose federal excise taxes on us. If it will go back into supporting habitat, go back into supporting the things that we enjoy doing in the outdoors. Just a little bit of background on the Game and Fish Fund. It's made up not only of license revenues, but also federal excise taxes on hunting arms and ammunition, and also angling equipment. It's probably the most scrutinized and transparent account in state government. The legislature has created a citizen oversight committee, a budget oversight committee. Each year, we report on the uses of the Game and Fish Fund. Down to the dollar, the various expenditures by program from that account. The citizens review that, make recommendations on the future as far as priorities, and also take a look at the status of the fund. Several years ago, they identified a very important issue regarding the status of the Game and Fish Fund, and that was that we were spending more on fisheries-related programs than we were bringing in angling revenue, and the converse was true for hunting programs. We were spending less on wildlife programs than we were bringing in on hunting and trapping licenses. And so they said this imbalance needs to be rectified. Basically, hunters are subsidizing anglers. They're subsidizing good fishing in this state, and so that needs to be addressed. In the meantime, the status of the overall Game and Fish Fund, the solvency of the fund has declined, and right now we're projecting that next fiscal year within this current biennium, at current rates of expenditure, the fund will go into the negative. So it's critical that we act quickly. There's some real urgency to this. Without some adjustment, without some fees, we will have to implement some fairly drastic and fairly significant either program reductions or even elimination of some programs that have the strong support of hunters and anglers, and that are very important to maintain the good quality hunting and angling that we've got in the state. I'm going to ask Fish and Wildlife Division Director Ed Bogus to talk in a little bit more detail about how we developed this proposal, but I'll just mention that we've worked very extensively for several years now with the Citizen Budget Oversight Committee on this proposal. We've done surveys and focus groups with our customers, our licensed buyers. We've utilized some real cutting-edge research here, some market-based research to determine price points and license options and that sort of thing. And we've talked to literally hundreds of clubs and organizations around the state, tens of thousands of hunters and anglers about this proposal as we've developed the details around which licenses, how much should they cost, and that sort of thing. The bill before you that Senator Ingebrigtsen has brought forward reflects most of that work, and it's largely, not entirely, but largely consistent with that original proposal. It will generate in the neighborhood of $11 more revenue annually than is currently being collected, and will certainly address solvency of the fund both during this current biennium, since we will start to collect the fees starting on March 13th, and that would, we believe, likely ensure solvency through fiscal year 13 and then going forward into the future. With that, I'll turn it over to Ed. He can quickly walk through the status of the Game and Fish Fund, a little bit of background about the fund, and the process we used to develop the proposal.
Mr. Bogus.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. I'm Ed Bogus. I'm Director of Fish and Wildlife for the Department of Natural Resources, and you should all have somewhere in front of you some PowerPoint slides that I'm going to just walk quickly through and hit the high points. In the interest of time, I'm not going to cover every amount of detail here. You've already heard a lot of good information. I certainly echo what Deputy Commissioner Shad said in terms of the appreciation to Senator Ingebrigtsen and all the hunting and angling community for their support for this initiative. We think it's a very important initiative. I just want to talk a little bit about kind of what went into putting this together. We took a business-like approach using business analysis and science. If you see on the first page, the bottom slide talks about the jobs that Mr. Leaf referenced earlier. There's national surveys done by the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service, done by the U.S. Census Bureau, that allow us to compare all the states. And then there's economic analysis by Southwick Associates that shows that the $3.6 billion in expenditures for hunting and fishing in Minnesota supports 56,000 jobs in the state. So it's more than just a recreation and a lifestyle. It is a job. It is significant in terms of jobs, and I think everyone knows, particularly in rural Minnesota, in the fall and the spring, a lot of those small towns are just really active with hunting and angling activity. The Game and Fish Fund itself, Mr. Shad talked about where that money comes from. You can see most of it's from the license fees. We also get the federal excise taxes that are collected nationally and apportioned back to the states. And the pie chart on the top of page two just shows the relative sources of money that goes into the Game and Fish Fund. One of the issues that Senator Ingebrigtsen talked about was that this bill was here last year, and we did some informational hearings to this group last year. But at that time, the blue line on that chart on the bottom of page two was what the fund statement was projecting. Looked like we had a little bit more time, a little less urgency. But since that time, the Game and Fish Fund, both the November forecast and now the February forecast, indicate that it's a much more dire situation in terms of the health of the Game and Fish Fund with it, as you've heard today, going insolvent by July 1 of next year. Moving on to page 3, just shows you what changed in that fund statement. It's a combination of loss of some federal dollars due to declines in sales of hunting and fishing equipment nationally and reducing then our share of that. We lost a one-time $2.2 million during the shutdown because we weren't selling fishing licenses, and we're projecting some decline in license sale revenue going forward. So all of that combined to make the situation much more urgent right now. Inflation. I'm just going to mention that obviously there's been an inflationary increase in the cost of doing business that I think everyone's pretty well aware of. Moving on to page four, we have done a lot of belt tightening and increase in efficiencies. That's the first thing we're asked is, well, why don't you just become more efficient? We have looked at our fleet vehicles, our pickup trucks, our passenger vehicles, our heavy equipment. We're going to more efficient vehicles where we can. We're reducing mileage on our vehicles. We're using more technology, kind of a smarter application of technology. One good example of that is that our creel clerks used to write down all the data as they were checking anglers. Now they have a tablet. Even before tablet computers were popular, we developed this tablet approach where they could enter the data right in the tablet in the boat. They have waterproof tablets they use, so it is instantly available. They don't have to go back and re-enter the data. We're doing more private contracting. We're doing more energy efficiency, solar and geothermal at hatcheries. So we are trying to work smarter and cheaper, but we're just being squeezed to the point where we're producing less for outcomes. One of the other common questions that we hear is, why don't you use the new legacy dollars or the Environment and Natural Resources Trust Fund? And I think this committee knows, but you may hear from your constituents, that we can't do that. The those funds are for specific purposes. They can't substitute for traditional sources of funding. And so the Game and Fish Fund really supports what we call the foundation of fish and wildlife conservation. It's the conservation officers, the fisheries biologists, the wildlife managers, the research biologists, and people that do the surveys that are only really able to be supported with this fund. Moving on to page five, and I'll quickly wrap it up here. The question that came up earlier, how we compare to other states. We are a top five destination, the other for fishing. The other four are all coastal states, but we're near the bottom of the pack when it comes to a resident fishing license. There are only 12 states that charge less for a resident fishing license than Minnesota does. Hunting is similar. We have that data. It's not in this presentation. And the value for the dollar, a lot of the testifiers have already talked about today. You get a lot of recreation time for the value of the licenses. One of the questions we've gotten is, why aren't there bigger increases proposed for non-resident licenses? There have been a number of changes in non-resident licenses over the last 10 years, surcharges for invasive species or for revenue on the ice shelter license. There have been some increases on non-resident fees that have not been corresponding increases in the resident fees. I think Mr. Leaf mentioned earlier, we did utilize a business and marketing approach with surveys of our customers and focus group sessions to find out what types of licenses and what prices would be most acceptable or attractive. Some of that summarized on the top of page seven, and different some licenses there was not a lot of interest in, others customers said they would support, for example, up to a $25 annual individual fishing license. That was more than what we ended up proposing, and I know it's down a little bit in this bill. So just to wrap up, the last slide there was based on the DNR proposal. The committee bill that's in front of you raises a little less revenue than this. Instead of 9.4, my understanding is it's about 6.9 million. On fishing license, and then on hunting license, it's 4.2 instead of 4.6. But overall, certainly this proposal is much appreciated and does address the solvency issue of the Game and Fish Fund. And with that, that concludes my testimony.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Bogus. Senator Ingebrigtsen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And again, I really thank the DNR for putting a lot of work into this, folks. I mean, this is a business approach to this, that they've been working on this for some time, and the Oversight Committee as well has put a lot of good time in. That was established some years ago. Maybe Mr. Shad could tell you how that came about. But if you're interested, but that's a committee that comes together and again monitors the revenues as well as the expenditures, and it's their indeed their recommendation that we move forward with this.
Senator Kielash?
Mr. Chair, Senator Ingebrigtsen, after all the extensive research the DNR has done about fishing licenses and all the licensing fees, why are you deviating with so many of these fees from what the governor's recommendation is? And, was there some basis for why one license you agreed with them and one you didn't? And Senator, considering the money left on the table as part of my reason for the question.
Senator Ingebrigtsen.
Thanks for that question, Senator Kielash. As you look at the bottom line, you'll see that there's a difference there on the last page, new revenue estimates, game and fish. There is a difference between $28 million and $22 million over the biennium of $6 million. We just, sat down and started looking at this. There was a very significant increase, and I know our first two testifiers will say that's still a good value at $24. We thought it was a little bit over the top. We thought $22 was fine. That's just simply an end run in correlation with some of the other ones with, angling. We also looked at some youth opportunities as well. We actually lowered some of the youth opportunities. We thought that, this committee has heard testimony from the DNR as well as other groups that we really want to get. We want to get people involved here. And if you get a grandchild involved, or you get a child involved, a lot of times you're going to get a parent involved as well. So we just thought it was a little more attractive, and we will be going through these one line by line if you'd like to address those. But that's where it was at. It does put a lot of money into the system at one time. It's going to be putting, Mr. Shad said, $11 million into the system per year over the next 2 years, so that's $22 million. We certainly think that that's going to be more than adequate. We just thought they were a little high in some areas.
Mr. Shad, or could you
Senator
just
Kielash.
Address the differences as far as the DNR's point of view?
Mr. Chairman, Senator Kielash, our surveys, our research indicated that there was tolerance up to that $24 for a fee increase, but as Senator Ingebrigtsen indicated, we also understood that that's a big jump, that $7 jump, and so we had an awful lot of discussion internally and with some of our customers about that size jump. We've also talked about actually, rather than making those kinds of really big jumps in a year, maybe phasing in a fee increase over several years as an alternative. It generates less revenue, but as Senator Ingebrigtsen said, this is still a very, very significant bill and does address solvency questions related to the fund.
Senator Kielash, if I could, too, the youth annual individual angling, I'll just hit on that one point there. The governor's proposal was actually to drop down from the current 17 to 12. We thought it would be better even. We even threw on the idea of going zero for youth, but we understood that we would lose some federal dollars if we did that, so we didn't think that would be very prudent. Again, $5 even for somebody for the youth in the state of Minnesota is a tremendous value. And again, it's a hook, if you will, to try and encourage them to start fishing and hunting. So, Mr. Chair, if there's nothing else, I would like Mr. Knopf to go through the bill, and he can address the changes. And thank you, guys.
Mr. Knopf.
Mr. Chairman and members of the committee, I'll walk through the language of the bill. I won't spend too much time on the fee numbers. I'll just point out where they are. Mr. Mueller's got a spreadsheet that kind of shows us and compares to the governor and the current, but I'll show you where the changes are in the bill. The first section is a technical section that relates to this new super sport license that's going to be offered and to make sure that we take the deer surcharge out of that. And then, Mr. Chair and members, Section 2 on page 2 is a walk-in access program that was described. What this would do is, and I want to point this out now, you'll see it at the end, but all of these sections take effect on March 1st of next year. That's the beginning of our license year. So this would not affect people hunting on a walk-in access this fall. It would be in 2013. But what it does do is requires a $15 fee for a validation fee that allows a person to hunt on a walk-in access site. It's my understanding that there's enough money to take care of the 2012 season, but this would be a fee that would start in 2013. And then, Mr. Chair and members, on Section 3, that's another technical provision. The DNR was recommending to add in even more numbers to the enormous number of things that we have there that you'd have to look up, and I tried to capsulize it and just say that it's limited by the number of days. So basically, we want to make sure if somebody buys a 7-day license, the season ends in the middle of that 7-day license, that they can continue to go forward. And then on the bottom of that, in paragraph F, you can see because there's going to be a new 3-year angling license for residents offered, that that we have basically have this in here to make sure that it's valid for those 3 years. Section 4 was a provision that the agency is recommending that basically that says that if you were a resident when you purchased the license, that would remain valid for the balance of the license period, to kind of clarify that if you moved out of the state. Section 5 deals with the turkey license, and again, there are some changes in here on how and who gets a turkey license. I'm not going to go into too much detail on some of these, just to point out that there are some changes on the way a turkey license would work for youth. And then in Section 7, we've also got some changes on the non-resident small game license. I think we actually saw this in the Game and Fish Bill. I think this is basically the same provision that we saw earlier. And then also with the persons under age 13 with big game, we've got some provisions in Section 8, Section 9, non-resident youth angling. I'll just point out that and highlight the ones that are tied to the fee increase. And then we can move on from that. One of the issues here is on 5.31 is a non-resident age 16 or over under age 18, so basically a 16 or 17-year-old must purchase a youth license for the fee so that they can purchase. This is a new youth license that's being proposed. There would be one for both non-residents and residents for 16 and 17-year-olds. And then on page 6, we get into the lifetime angling license fees. Because of the fee changes that are in the bill, we're increasing the amount that people have to pay to buy a lifetime license. The fees are – well, the DNR had specified what this is. I just modified the angling license to with two-thirds of the revenue, since the fee that's being proposed in this bill is two-thirds of the DNR's proposal. Those represent for the angling portion two-thirds of the angling portion of those fees. So I think we came pretty close on that, but we might need more information later. Section, and then if you get page 8, again, another lifetime license. You see the resident hunting. You'll see the increases basically to go to $15.50 for over 18 and under age 65 for small game. And you got to remember, when you're looking at the sheet that Mr. Mueller put out, that you have to add the small game surcharge to that, and that's $6.50. So when you're looking at those license fees, the $15.50 would turn into $22. And then you'll see that for age 13 to under 18, we're going to go to $13. And then you see the deer, it goes to $30. And then you've also got the increases for moose and those. And you can see that some of the changes there is because we're not going to be charging a license for somebody under the age of 13. There's a new 16 that's going to be a 72-hour period to basically take small game for 72 hours, and all the stamps will be included if somebody wants to hunt just for a weekend. So that's a new fee category that the DNR has recommended, and that's in Senator Ingebrigtsen's bill. Clause 17 there, that's the one Senator Ingebrigtsen was just talking about, in that it's we'll see that for fishing too, but this would allow somebody, a 16 or 17-year-old, to purchase a small game license for $5, and we'll see the same for fishing. And then on the bottom of page 9, you can see, well, you'll see all the changes for the non-resident license fee. Again, you can go over those on the spreadsheet, what those actual changes are. But you'll also see a 72-hour period for a non-resident for a fee of $75. For the residents, $19 to take a small game for a weekend with all the stamps included. And the reason you see the additional language in there is because they want to make sure that the stamp accounts receive some of the money from this license. And then, Mr. Chair and members, on Section 19, we're saying that the youth licenses don't have to have the small game surcharge. So the youth license will be $5. It's not $5 plus the $6.50. It's $5. And then, Mr. Chair members, we get to the resident fishing, and you can see the increases that were just being discussed. The basic angling license at $17 and then going to $22. Mm-hmm. And you see it similarly, the combined married couple license. And then, Mr. Chair and Senator Ingebrigtsen, I think on 10.28, we didn't talk about this yesterday, and I think we missed this license. It looks like it's a little out of line with the other ones. On 10.28, that should read $63 and not $69. So if you want to just orally insert that in your document. And members, just to be clear, we don't have a bill in front. It's not an official bill. This is a bill draft that will be prepared for introduction as a committee bill. But that should be read $63 on 10.28. And then, again, we've got the resident fishing for 16 and 17-year-olds on 10.29 of $5, as I mentioned earlier. Now we have the non-resident fishing. You can see the increases that are there. We also allow a youth under the age, or 16 and 17-year-olds to fish for $5, non-resident youth. One of them that I do want to point out that I think I missed on the previous page is the reduction in the spearing license. Or is that coming up? That might be coming up still. I want to make sure. No, there it is. 10.21 to 10.22. And this was a recommendation of the agency, was to reduce the spearing license from $17 to $5. And we had this discussion, I think, last year or the year before, where spears have to buy, they have to have an angling license. And so this would just be the $5 add-on to the angling license. Currently, they buy both the $17 licenses, the angling and the spearing license to spear fish in Minnesota. And then, Mr. Chair and members, if we go back to page 11, paragraph B is increasing the surcharge for non-residents. Currently, we have a $2 invasive species surcharge, and this was a recommendation of the department to increase that to $5 to get more money into the invasive species account from the surcharge on non-resident fishing licenses. And in section 22, you have this new super. Well, you'll see the changes to the individual and the combined license, married couple license, sporting license, and then you see this new super sport license in paragraph B that basically allows somebody to get a complete license. Basically, they can, I think, just about take any species except maybe a wolf in the state. There might be a few others, but that's the. That's the super sport license that's been talked about. And then, Mr. Chair and members, we have 23 of the increases in fish house licenses. 24 are the non-resident fish house licenses. We've got the increase in trapping license in section 25. The duplicate license, that's just accepting out the super sport license from the duplicate. And then, Mr. Chair and members, there's basically says there's no fee for replacing that super sport license. And then, Mr. Chair, we've got the Camp Ripley Archery Deer Hunt. That's the change in the top of page 13. And then on section 29, it's eliminating this provision, some provisions on electronic licensing, exempting the small game surcharge and the fee, the $2.50 fee on license. There's a long history to that I won't go into. And then, Mr. Chair and members, the firearm safety certificate requirement, that's just a technical change dealing with the subdivisions that are being changed and to modify that. Section 31 deals with the stamp required on residents and non-residents, for the short-term licenses. And then, Mr. Chair and members, we've got the same with the migratory waterfowl stamp requirements. And then, Mr. Chair and members, we have the... Section 33 deals with the trout and salmon stamp validation. We're making sure that the 16 and 17-year-olds don't have to have the trout and salmon stamp validation on their fishing licenses. They could fish for trout without that. And then Section 34 is dealing with the addition of the new 72-hour license. And then Section 35, this is what this does is because the additional $3 on the non-resident fishing license for invasive species, there's about $500,000 that will be transferred over to the invasive species account as a result of passing that. It's about $500,000 a year from the $3 increase. And so that's an automatic, that's transferred by statute. This transfers an additional $500,000 from the Game and Fish Fund to the invasive species account. And you'll see in Section 36, we're appropriating $1 million from the invasive species account and adding it to the appropriation last session. And one of the reasons for that, you'll see in the later bill, it kind of puts back in the $1 million when trust fund money is going to get moved to the University of Minnesota. This replenishes the $1 million to give them the same amount that they would have had appropriated in last year's appropriation bill. Then there is a change too on 15.21. Mr. Chair, Senator Ingebrigtsen, we should probably clarify after the period. This is a one-time appropriation, so we'll make sure that that's in there too.
Mr. Knopf, I think Senator Higgins may have a question. I know she had certainly some issues with this with regards to that, so I want to make sure it's clear. I mean, the transfer of the dollars back that were taken from the LCCMR that was going to the DNR for invasive species. So,
Senator Higgins. I followed this.
Okay. Mr. All right. Chair, I just wanted to make sure. Thank you.
And then, Mr. Chair, so we'll add that this is a one-time appropriation on 15.21 after the period. And then there are three repealers related to this. The first two are more technical, but the third one, and you should have in your packet an appendix with the repealers on them so you can see those. But the large one in here is repealing 97C303, the conservation angling license, is eliminating that conservation angling license. I think the DNR, if you look at them, their proposal, they had also proposed removing that conservation angling license. And so that's those are the changes in the bill. And I'll point out again the effective date, March 1st, 2013, on all the sections except for the transfer and appropriations. So this would become, and generally the game and fish bills are always effective the next March 1st because the March 1st is the beginning of a license year for game and fish licenses.
Senator Kielash.
Yeah, Mr. Knopf, on the Section 35 transfer of funds, I think you said that the $3 is automatically put in and this is an additional?
Yes.
$500,000. So where is this additional $500,000 coming from?
Mr. Chair, Senator Kielash, this is coming from the license increase.
From the increase in, okay. Do we know how much, Mr. Chair, Mr. Knopf, how much is going in based on the $3 fee?
Mr. Knopf.
Do we know?
Mr. Chair, the $2 fee, I think Mr. Mueller would be better able to answer that.
Mr. Mueller.
Mr. Chairman, Senator Kielash, I believe it's about $365,000 right now the $2 surcharge is doing, so they're raising it up another $3 above that.
Okay, thanks.
Any other questions? Senator Ingebrigtsen.
Mr. Chair, if I could, we did somehow, the Dark House Association wanted to testify as well, and if he'd just come up for a couple of minutes here real quickly, well, we somehow forgot to put him on the list, so just a couple of minutes, please.
Can we do Senator Dietzick? Did you have a question?
I just had a comment. Normally, thank you, Mr. Chair, Senator Ingebrigtsen, and I think this is a very good bill. Normally, leaving this money on the table would give me heartburn, but since that in my community I have a lot of young children and young immigrant children and a lot of 16 and 17-year-olds that they could not afford the $17 fee, and I think if we want to grow the fishing community, I think we want to get them, as you said, hooked in, and so I think lowering this fee would help improve the chances that we get them involved. So thank you.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, I'm Tim Spreck. I'm president of the Minnesota Dark House Angling Association. I'm also vice president of the Minnesota Outdoor Heritage Alliance, which is commonly referred to as MOHA. I'm going to offer testimony today on behalf of both groups. First, I'll start with MOHA. You've all received a letter from our president, Don McMillan, just want to reiterate and support the fact that MOHA, on behalf of our 60-some member groups and roughly 350,000 sportsmen statewide, offer firm and complete support for this bill as it stands. We'd like to see this happen, and it needs to be a part of what we do moving forward for the sportsmen in the state of Minnesota. Also, the Minnesota Dark House Angling Association stands in support of this bill as well. Mr. Knopf addressed the issue a little bit earlier that I wanted to address. It's important that everyone on this committee understands that in an atmosphere where we're concerned about fees and needing to raise fees on sportsmen, why the Dark House Spear Fisherman is experiencing a reduction as a result of the provision that's in this bill. Most of you know that we've met in private or we've had discussions in the past. The Dark House Spear Fisherman is charged two fees currently, one an angling fee and then a surcharge for Dark House spearing. And it's actually been punitive and negative to our ability to retain and recruit people to our sport. When you're looking at a roughly $40 spearfishing fee to practice a sport that only lasts 3 months out of the year, it tends to be negative and punitive. So I want to thank Senator Ingebrigtsen and the other mysterious members of the committee that brought forward this bill for addressing this issue on our behalf. We're very pleased with the bill as it stands and offer our full support.
Thank you, Mr. Sprick. Any other questions, members? Hearing none, Senator Ingebrigtsen.
With that, Mr. Chair, I would move that the contents of the draft bill, the Senate Committee number 8719, to be introduced as a committee bill with the appendix as amended.
All in favor? Did you want to finish that?
To pass, yes.
Yes. All in favor say aye.
Aye. Aye.
All opposed, nay. The ayes have it. It does pass.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. The next bill that I have before you is the Legacy Omnibus Committee Bill. I have with me today the Executive Director of the Lasard Sams.
Mr. Ingebrigtsen.
Executive Director of the Lasard Sams Outdoor Heritage Committee for any questions. But as we move forward here, I think what we'll do is have Mr. Knopf explain the differences that there have been some changes, but basically what this is as those of you that do know, the Outdoor Heritage, Lasard Sams Outdoor Heritage Fund is a one-year expenditure versus the rest of the legacy money is a two-year. And with that, I'll turn it over to Mr. Knopf to explain the differences.
Mr. Knopf.
Well, Mr. Chair and members, actually, Article 1 is the contents of Senate File 1632 as it left this committee and as the City and the Finance Committee. But it's my understanding that we need a couple of technical amendments to it. They're not in there yet. I did receive some emails from Mr. Becker this afternoon. And basically on page, well, let's do this other one first so we go kind of in page order here. It would be on 12, page 12, line 34. We need to, apparently there's some issue with the way that cold water fish habitats, sometimes they do get into lakes there were some issues raised as far as whether or not, since we don't list lakes here, on 12.34, the thought would be to increase, after cold water, insert lakes, comma, and then a comma, fish river. I think we need to, is that before? After the word fish. I'm sorry, it should be after the word fish. Yeah. Fish lakes, cold water fish lakes, comma, river, and then a comma after river, and then end stream habitats. So it would be cold water fish lakes, comma, river, comma, and stream habitats in Minnesota. And then, Mr. Chair, the other one, I think there was just a bad cross-reference. If you look on page 15, line 10, we have that it says subdivision 12. That should be subdivision 13. Those are the only changes that I'm aware of for Article 1, and I don't know if you would need to go. You did a fairly expensive presentation of this bill as it was coming through this committee and moved to Finance Committee. Except for those changes, this will be identical to what is in that, the bill that was heard earlier this session.
Mr. Chair, I would offer those amendments.
Okay. All in favor of adopting those amendments, say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? They're adopted.
And then, Mr. Chair?
Yes. Senator Higgins.
On the last page, at our last meeting, we talked about the appropriation not subject to 116P05, which is the LCCMR, the work plan and all of that. And I believe we agreed to take that out of this. So I'll move that. Let's see. Line 31.9, starting the sentence starting this appropriation. Delete that. Delete 31.10 and 31.11. Up to the new sentence. So, including subdivision 4. Period.
Okay. Okay, all in favor of that motion, say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, nay. Ayes have it. Motion's been approved.
And Mr. Chair,
Mr.
members,
Kanaugh.
I think we should move on to Article 2. I think Ms. Delafontaine would can go through Article 2. She worked on that part of the bill.
Yes, Mr.
Delafontaine.
Yes, Mr. Chair and members, Article 2 starts on page 23. And this article contains the contents of Senator Carlson's Senate file 2264, and that was also passed out of this committee and was sent to finance, I believe. So that article contains some changes for some clean water assistance grants and some additional money that went out and changes to some the Bowser language in the appropriation bill from last year, clean water fund money, and then also clean water money for the Aquatic Invasive Species Cooperative Research Center in Section 2 on page 27. And then Article 3 is two sections. The first section on page 28 is from Senator Peterson's Senate file 1732, and that provision would eliminate the match requirement for the grant program and also provides that the grant amounts are not subject to maximum grant award limitations. And then there's in Section 2, there's some language that was suggested by the Met Council for Metro Parks. And that would just extend, make funds available until 2013 for Metro Parks, and also talks about projects that receive federal funds. Article 4 is the Environment and Natural Resources Trust Fund article, and that was also contained in Senator Carlson's Senate file 2264, and that it makes some redirecting of $1 million for the Aquatic Invasive Species Cooperative Research Center. And then I also wanted to mention that the money was available for the Aquatic Invasive Cooperative Research Center. The previous version you saw it was available until 2014, and this extends it till 2016 to have that money be available.
Members, question? Yes, Senator Higgins.
Mr. Chair, I'm looking on page 28, and I see that we're extending the appropriations for the parks and trails, including some money to plant trees along the World War I Memorial at Victory Memorial Parkway. And I'm wondering if we could make that available kind of through the rest of the planting season for that summer. It would kind of make sense to maybe do September 1st or September 15th or something, just in case they can't get the trees planted by June 30th.
Senator Ingebretson?
I don't know if it
Senator
be
Higgins,
a problem,
what lines are you referring
I'm
to?
I'm sorry, Mr. Chair. Or, yeah, Mr. Chair, Mr. the other Mr. Chair. 28.17 through 21, the new language on page 28. Part of the Victory Memorial Parkway is the largest World War I memorial in the country, and it extends in my district from Lowry Avenue north to Victory Memorial Drive and then west to Humboldt. And we've restored a lot of the memorial itself, the monument. But for every soldier in Hennepin County who died, any soldier and nurse who died in Hennepin County in World War I, there is a monument and a tree planted. and some of the trees have bit the dust over the years. This money here is for replanting the trees. And I'm just thinking that if we give it through the planting season, that might just give a little more time. And maybe the park board will have it all done by June 30th, and I'm, you know, out to lunch on the whole thing. But.
Mr. Chair, if I could have Mr. Knopf address that, please. Yep.
Well, Mr. Chair, Senator Higgins, this will not affect that appropriation. Because you got to notice, if you notice, it says that $40,000 the first year is for a grant to Hennepin County. The first year is fiscal year 2010.
We've already done it.
Yes. It's already been done.
Oh, sorry.
This is only affecting the rest of the.
I'm sorry.
That's right.
At least I got to tell everybody what the four-wheel drive was.
There you go.
Certainly sounded good to me.
It's
wonderful.
Sure.
We were all in.
If you want to come visit, I'll give you a tour. It's quite
amazing. Senator Ingebretson.
If there's no further questions,
are there any further questions, members? Hearing none, Senator Ingebretson.
Then I would move that, I believe this is 8716, move 8716 to pass as introduced with the amendments.
Committee bill.
As a committee bill.
As a committee bill?
Yep.
And, Mr. Chair, just remind us the committee bill process.
Mr. Chair, Senator Higgins, the committee bill process is where a committee has a draft bill in front of it, and it amends it however it wants to, and then the chair introduces it for the committee. So the chair will introduce this bill, and it does not have to come back to this committee. It needs to go to any other committees that it will need to go to. Likely both of these bills will just go directly to the Finance Committee. And so Senator Ingebretson will amend these bill drafts to whatever was done today and send them to the advisor's office with the jackets for Senator Ingebretson, and he will introduce them as a committee bill.
Okay. Senator Ingebretson moves it as a committee bill. 8716. All in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, same sign. Ayes have it. Bill is passed.
You don't have to do anything.
Members, we covered a lot of ground there. We do have one other Senate file before us, Senator Benson, but I don't know if she's here.
Senator Ingebretson, Senator Benson will be right up.
Members, just for a point of information, we're waiting for Senator Benson. Thursday's committee meeting, we will be taking up the annual lands bill as well as some school trust. I think it's Senator Cruz. Senator Cruz's school trust bill, so just so you know that. Well, Carlson will be doing the lands bill, yeah. Senator Benson, welcome. Senate File 1749. Is this your first meeting, first time to this committee?
Mr. Chair and committee members, yes, this is
my
first time.
Let the hazing begin.
I survived, Mr. Chair, I survived judiciary hazing. I think I'll be okay.
Yeah. I'm not going to comment about judiciary. Last time I got into trouble with Senator Higgins about doing that, but I know where you're coming from. Thank you. Welcome.
Mr. Chair and committee members, Senate File 1749 was initially drafted to be a full repeal of existing policy to put the DNR data policy back to where it had been. Out of concern for privacy, we have not done a full repeal. Instead, we have made the information available for specific purposes and specific business interests. And so, Mr. Chair and members, there is an amendment. If someone is able to
pass that out, the
A2 amendment.
It's not a delete all.
No.
I believe with you today you have Bob Meyer from the DNR. Maybe he'd come forward. Members, we'll get that amendment passed out here real quick. Senator Benson, to the A2 amendment.
Yes, Mr. Chair, and it really fills out a portion of the bill that had needed adjusting since it left Judiciary. While the newspapers and other groups favor a full repeal of this statute, we decided to limit access for the sake of privacy. We heard testimony on people who had storage facilities, and someone would abandon their storage facility, and there would be a boat or a snowmobile in the storage facility, and they couldn't find out who owned it, they couldn't get title to it, they couldn't sell it. So they need access to these records. People going through bankruptcies or other legal issues might have a snowmobile or a boat that they need to track down or have accounted as part of court documents. And the amendment goes to insurers or others in that area, private investigators, who would also benefit from access to this data. And with that, I will let Mr. Meyer.
Any questions of the amendment? Mr. Meyer, welcome to the amendment.
Mr. Chairman, thank you, members. For the record, Bob Meyer, Department of Natural Resources. We did provide this language to the author after the discussion of the Judiciary Committee, and we felt that it did need additional clarification to allow for these purposes. Just a little history on this data. It had always been public up until approximately 2006, at which time there was a federal code passed in law, federal law that required license data that was generated off of the license number to be classified as private, and it was only allowed 14 permissible uses. At that time, we evaluated our system, which was connected to the Department of Public Safety's license system. So you would go to buy a license, scan your driver's license. We would go into the DPS database, take that number, pull the data out of their database, populate our system, and because of that interconnectedness, we were determined to be classified under this federal code. In 2009, the department created a new electronic licensing system whereby we severed that link and started to repopulate our database based upon a unique DNR identification number. So we are no longer tied to the federal code restrictions. However, that data did remain public. I should say was private. We came to the legislature in 2009 and asked the legislature to make a determination on this data, whether it should be public or private, because it was public. It was private for a while, and then Commissioner Holston said, well, tell us if you want it to be public or private. At that point, the legislature determined that all of the data should remain private. I did speak with insurance companies and other people. I was kind of surprised that people weren't asking for these kind of exemptions on the data, because we thought maybe you're going to want to know if you're a tow truck driver or an insurance company or a bank looking for a defaulted snowmobile or boat or something. You might want to access this data. Nobody raised any concerns. It was made all private. And now I believe Senator Benson is taking the approach after the second and the first engrossment of this bill to allow for certain uses of this data to be used. Making it all public is easier to manage, but we can manage it under this requirement as well. Our main concern at the time in 2009 when we came to the legislature and now is you tell us what to do, but also we want a system that's easy to administer. We don't want a complicated system that may set our staff up to fail when they are sorting this data, because there are penalties for violations of data practices laws. and something that meets the needs that are of the people that are out there. So we do understand the need for some of this data, and we can support the language in the bill at this time.
Members, any questions about the amendment? Hearing none, Senator Carlson moves that Senate File 1749 be amended, offering the A2 amendment. Any further questions? Hearing none, all in favor say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Both same sign. Okay. Senator Benson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and that concludes my presentation on this bill. If Mr. Meyer would like to add anything at this time.
Senator Higgins has a question.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Senator Benson, when you gave your introductory remarks, you talked about a storage facility needing to find the owner, but I don't see that anywhere in your bill. I see towed and impounded.
Yes, and Senator Higgins, you were hiding. I didn't know you were on this committee. I would have
sorry.
Been.
Senator I think everybody's Higgins lives miserable
catches
these days, so
everything.
Senator Benson.
Mr. Chair and Senator Higgins would go to pursuing legal remedies, recovering debt or security interests. It would be in a general contract in the normal course of a legitimate business. Item number two.
Thank you.
Members, any further questions of the author? This goes to the floor. Senator Benson.
Mr. Chair.
I have to have somebody from the committee. Somebody from the committee. Senator Carlson moves Senate File 1749 as amended to go directly to the floor. Pass and go directly to the floor. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, same sign. Good. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and committee
members.
Wasn't
too bad, was it?
Costco.
Get my what?
Not Costco.
Yeah. All right. Nothing more before the committee.